The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 12, text number 28, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 10th, 2009, in Sydney, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 12, text number 28. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Maitreya Uvacha Nishamya Vaikuntha Niyojya Mukhyayor Madhuchitam Vacha Marukrama Priya. Krita Abhisheka Krita Nitya Mangalo Munin pranam yashisham abhyabhadayat. Maitreya uvacha Nishamya vaikuntha niyojya mukhyayor Madhuchitam vacha marukrama priya. Krita Abhisheka Krita Nitya Mangalo Munin Pranam Yashisham Abhyabhariyat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya continued, Dhruva Maharaj was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Purport. We should mark how dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service, even at the time he left this material world. He was constantly alert in the performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient as auspicious decoration to purify the body. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Vajrik Ashram, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent of the Lord Vishnu was waiting for him. As a humble Vaishnava, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the plane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Balakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Zajiva Sadaitam Zavadutam
Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. So, this verse is full of all sorts of wonderful nectarian instructions from Srila Prabhupada. I particularly like this idea of wearing tilak. This is very nice. That one should rise early in the morning, take bath and decorate his body with tilak. Does this say that every devotee who lives in the ashram should do this? No. It says every devotee. That means if I'm working at ABC Corporation, still I can rise early in the morning, I can take my bath, I can put on my tilak, I can do my japa, read my Bhagavatam, sing Gravastakam prayers, take prasadam. Then I can always wipe off a tilak and put water tilak instead before I go to the office. If the tilak is somehow incompatible with the office environment in which I work, then I can leave all the other tilak marks on. I can simply wipe this one off and put one, do it with water. Om Keshavaya Namaha. This way I'm still decorated with tilak. I can go to my office or my business or my job and remain protected by the transcendental armor known as tilak. So this is one nice point made here. Dhruva Maharaj was so dutiful that even the airplane came to take him back to Gaudiya. He said, let me take my bath and decorate with tilak first. Then I would get on the airplane. Just see how dutiful he was. Not that all the airplane they back together, let me just jump on. No. No, first I had to take bath, I got to put on my tilak. Well, in this case, it was ornament. Gold and jute ornament mentioned here. What does he say here? Suitable ornament. Yeah. So, but for us, that would mean putting on the tilak is Prabhupada's elaborating the purport. So, this is very nice to see how he is not acting out of the mode of passion. You see. Even at this moment, he's very, very subtic, even when the airplane comes. That's a nice thing to remember. Dhruva Maharaj's, his senses were always under control, you see. Dhamma, we say that one of the second quality of the Brahman is Dhamma. That means that the senses are controlled. So he was very sense controlled. Even though he is Kshatriya, still he had brahminical qualities. His senses were very much controlled. So this is a very good point. One has to be very, very sense controlled in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, if we allow our senses to dictate to us, then we fall into Maya's trap. You know that Maya's trap? Oh, it's a very heavy thing. Jayato vishayan pumsam sangat teshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodo bijayate krodat bhavati sang mahat smriti vibhrama smriti branshak buddhina sho burina shat pranashati. It's very heavy trap, you see. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. From lust comes anger. From anger comes delusion. From delusion comes bewilderment of memory. And when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, what happens? Bloop! You fall back down into the material pool. So it's very important to have senses that are restrained. That one always keeps the senses under control. The senses are compared to horses. The mind is compared to reins. The intelligence is compared to the driver, and the jiva is compared to the passenger. So, of course, how many of us take out horses on our drive to work? No. But we can think about an automobile, you see. The mind is the steering wheel. Now, when you go to work, you think, well, you just think, you just throw up your hands and let the car go where it wants to go. No, you crash, you see. So you got to keep your hand on that steering wheel. So in the same way, you see, the mind is like the steering wheel. We have to always keep that mind under control. It's like the steering wheel. As soon as you let go of the steering wheel, especially if you're going at high speed, you know, like we do nowadays, just imagine you're going, you know, 80 kilometers per hour and you take your hand off the steering wheel. It's almost sure death, you see. So if we hold on to that steering wheel, it's holding on for life. Vaguely speaking, we're holding on for dear life. You let go of that wheel, it's vaguely, you know you're going to die, you see. So actually we have to have that same determination. Please do not sleep. We like having you here. You're a wonderful devotee. You please stay here and bless us with your sangha. Jai Prabhu, Hare Krishna. So, if we let go of the mind, it's a suicidal thing. Just like letting go of the steering wheel at 80 kilometers per hour is suicidal. If you let go of your mind, the same thing happens. It's suicidal. You see, because your mind will then find some wonderful, you know, so-called wonderful sense object to get entangled with. So it's very, very important that we keep that mind. It's like the steering wheel on the car. We keep our hands on that mind, keep it under control. You see, it's like that old folk song: "Keep your hands on that plow, hold on." You know, got to hold on to that mind, keep it under control. That's a very important thing. You see? Another really important point here, as Prabhupada elaborates on it in his purport, take his bath, put on his tilak and hop on the plane. He even went a further step. Here's all these great saintly persons there. He first offered his obeisances to all the devotees who were there and got their blessings to go back to Godhead, or to go back to the Vishnu planet, I think he went. But just imagine, he didn't want to just go back to God. I mean, it was such an auspicious thing, but he wanted to first get the blessings of all the sages. Another nice point is, what did he do to get their blessings? He offered his obeisances. So, this is actually a way of getting the blessings of the Vaishnavas, by offering your obeisances to them. So how much do we want the blessings of the Vaishnavas? To that extent, we should offer our obeisances to the Vaishnavas. The more you offer obeisances to the Vaishnavas, the more you become blessed. So we shouldn't just offer once in the morning Vanchakalpatarubhyascha. We should constantly be offering obeisances to Vaishnavas within our heart, by the way that we deal with them, by the way we think about them, the way we speak about them. We should constantly be offering obeisances to the Vaishnavas, because by this we'll constantly be getting their blessing, you see. And this is confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur, as I love to quote it. It's one of my favorite quotes. Anande bolo hadi bhajav nindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava pade majai aman. Ecstatically chant Hare Krishna, worship the holy name. Anande bolo hadi bhajavindavan, Shri Guru, and always worship, always offer your respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnavas. So, by this constantly offering our obeisances to the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnavas, then we become the constant recipient of their blessings 24/7. The fact is, we need a lot of mercy. I mean, we're really messed up. Kali Yugites, we're really messed up. I mean, really, really, we're in heavy Maya, let's face it. Really, we're in heavy, heavy Maya. We're not like the sages in the Satya Yuga, the Dwarpa Yuga, even the Treta Yuga. I mean, it's pretty heavy, you know. Prayanapa yusha shabya kalavasman yuge manaha mandasu mandamatiyo mandyabhakya hyupadrutaha. Oh, learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men are but short-lived. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, and above all, their minds are always agitated like anything. I mean, we really are, you know, our minds are so agitated. So we really, really need as much mercy as we can. Really, really. That's why Vishwanath Chakravarti said you should constantly offer your obeisances to your spiritual master. One should always remember and praise the spiritual master. You see. Always be respecting and worshipping the spiritual master within one's heart 24/7. Because in that way you become the constant recipient of his blessings. So these are very, very nice points. What other points are there here? Unlimited points. This also nice, the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates. This means the Vaishnavas. What is the characteristic of the Vaishnavas? They speak very sweetly. That is one of the characteristics of Vaishnavas. I was just hearing a tape about a half an hour ago of Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. And Jayananda, his dear disciple, walked into the room, and Prabhupada, he spoke so sweetly. He said, "I was just thinking about Jayananda, and now he has come." And everybody was going, oh, they're in bliss to hear Prabhupada talking so, and so much love and affection, you see. And when Mataji just went, oh, you could hear just in ecstasy, this Mataji was just oohing and eyeing, you know, hearing Prabhupada's sweet speech, you know. So, we have to learn how to, this is one of the, you know, we find that often devotees are agitated by the rough speech that they get in the association of devotees, you know, the rough and tumble speech. It just means we're not, you know, we're really, really neophytes, you know. We advanced devotees, just to hear them speak. I remember just talking with one of my godbrothers on the telephone one time, Bhakti Chiruswami. I'm just talking with him on the phone. I just felt like I was getting a massage, you know, just by hearing his voice, you know. I getting a soul massage, you know. My whole soul was being massaged just by hearing his voice, you know. It was so sweet the way Bhakti Chiruswami was speaking. So this is one of the characteristics of a Vaishnava. You may say, but Prabhupada sometimes roared like a lion. And that's true. The Vaishnavas, for the sake of teaching and training, they will sometimes, you know, very heavy. But for those who are actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, that's another kind of sweetness, you see. They relish that also. It's all of it's relishable nectar. Actually, the advanced devotees, they never really get angry. There's a pastime in this regard. My godbrother Chitsukananda, he very nicely tells this story, that he was the temple president at the time in Mexico City, temple, Mexico. And the devotees were up late doing something, I don't know what. But anyway, at Mangal Arati, nobody was there. But they did happen to make it for class. And Prabhupada started really chastising them for not coming to Mangal Arati. I mean, it was heavy. They were shaking. It was heavy, heavy chastisement. And he was just like a lion, a roaring lion. And after the Bhagavatam class was over, Chitsukananda, he always liked to position himself like Prabhupada's puppy dog. You know, he just followed along with Prabhupada. So he left the Prabhupada outside the temple room, and Mexico City is like a, you know, kind of a tropical thing. There was some real nice flowers growing there outside the door. So he picked some flowers, he offered them to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada smelled them. The Prabhupada had been roaring like a lion. He appeared to be extremely angry, you see. shaking with anger. I mean, you can imagine. Prabhupada's anger was heavy, heavy. But he gave him this flower, and Prabhupada just immediately was like, just in a very sweet, sublime, relishing the flower's aroma, mood. And Chitsukananda was amazed. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you were so intense with anger, now you're so mellow. How is that, Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, actually, I'm never angry. I just have to make a show of anger to teach you all. You know, to train you, I have to make a show of anger. So actually, the devotee, he never really, he's always in that sweet mood, but he has to make sometimes, out of compassion on his disciples, he has to make that show of anger, just to help them to become free from the illusion of, I am God, I am the center of existence. So that quality of sweetness is always there. That's the point I'm making. Even when the spiritual master, the senior devotees, when they show anger, those who are actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, even when they show anger, the sweetness is actually still there. Their anger is not ordinary anger. It's transcendental anger. So, how does one respond if one is sometimes blessed with transcendental anger from an advanced devotee? That's described by Srila Prabhupada in his purport. He says that one should pacify the angry brahmana with sweet words and a smiling face. In other words, one should not retaliate. If a senior devotee corrects us in a very strong way, we shouldn't try to retaliate with that. That's the point. We should accept it. The mercy of Krishna, the mercy of the Vaishnava, the mercy of the spiritual master. And in a very sweet way, we should try to accept it. So that quality of sweetness, that is all-pervading in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means sweetness, the perfection of sweetness, you see. We try to find sweetness in material sense gratification. That rajasic, you see, enjoyment. But it always becomes bitter. It always becomes bitter. But that happiness, beginning with sattvic happiness, actually, even before pure Krishna bhakti, even that sattvic happiness, yattarage vishamiva parename mritopamam satvam satvikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. That happiness, which, I mean to say, that which in the beginning may be very, very unpleasant, very, very bitter, you see, but in the end becomes sweeter than the sweetest honey, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18. So, sometimes it appears bitter, you see, Krishna consciousness. And our need, right now we're not in pure goodness yet, but we're trying to, our approach to Krishna consciousness means we're entering into sattva-guna, are trying to become Krishna conscious. So in the beginning, sometimes it appears bitter. You see. Why I have to get up in the morning early? Why I can't sleep late? Oh, I don't want to get up. Why I need, you know. In this way, sometimes it is bitter. But if we persevere in the practice of sadhana bhakti, then that which appeared bitter, it will become the sweetest, sweetest nectar. Because actually it's always sweet. It is simply due to our covering by the modes of nature that that unlimitedly sweet Krishna consciousness sometimes is bitter. It's not bitter. That is simply our misperception. Prabhupada told us in the early days when we still call him Swamiji, he said, you cannot find any point about this Krishna consciousness. You can say, Swamiji, this point is troublesome. He said, it is simply recreation. Susukam. He quoted Bhagavad Gita 9.2. Susukam. You see, sukam is happiness. But susukam is very, very happy, you see. Very, very joyful thing. Prabhupada said, simply recreation. There's nothing troublesome at all. So, sometimes devotees leave. They say, well, this is troublesome. I'm getting out of here. Prabhupada said there is nothing troublesome, but even if you think it is troublesome, you must tolerate and remain. Not that I find something troublesome, so I leave this Krishna conscious movement. He said, that is not surrender. If I'm actually surrendered to Krishna, even if Krishna tortures me in this Krishna conscious movement, I find it to be a torture to be in this movement. Still, if I'm actually Krishna's surrendered devotee, I will accept torture. Didn't Bali Maharaj accept torture? What was his reward for surrendering? Now I push you into hell. He surrendered his whole kingdom, everything, and now I push you into hell. Just see. And he accepted it joyfully. My Lord is pushing me into hell, and I accept it. And Krishna was so pleased that he went to hell with him as his servant. The Lord became his personal servant in the hell. So he wasn't really in hell. He accepted it as the Lord's mercy, and the Lord came with him. So we can learn to take everything that Krishna is giving us as the sweetest nectar, the sweetest, most inconceivable mercy. What will be the result? Krishna will give us his association at every minute. That will be the result. And if Krishna is giving you his personal association at every minute, then there's no difficulty. And it's explained like this in the Narada Pancharatra. Dikkalad yana vachane Krishna cheto vidhayacha tanmayo bhavati chipram jivo brahmani yojaya. By concentrating one's attention on the form of Krishna, who is all-pervading and beyond time and space, one becomes absorbed in thinking of him and then begins to enjoy his transcendental association. So if we will just ignore all of the attempts of Maya to pull us, our consciousness away from Krishna, and keep bringing it back to Krishna, yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalamastara, just keep bringing that consciousness back to Krishna, the form of Krishna, the name of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, etc. The result will be that as our mind becomes more and more absorbed in Krishna, we will feel and experience tangibly how Krishna is blessing us with his association at every minute, wherever we are, whether we're serving the deity, whether we're out preaching, whether we're cleaning the pots, whether we're, whatever it may be in Krishna's service, we will feel how Krishna is blessing us by his divine presence. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
You said that even though Venkata plane was there and Dhruva Maharaj was very fixed up in his devotional service, so how would you compare that with Niyamagraha?
All right, comparing what with Niyamagraha?
Dhruva Maharaj, even though the pervert of the plane has come and he's going to take the path.
Alright, so how would these... Alright, so he's saying, wait a minute, before I get on the plane, I'm going to take bath. So how does that relate with Niyamagraha? What would be a mundane example? Well, maybe, it's time to go to the airport to get the plane, but I'm going to take bath first. I want to be clean when I go on the airplane. So the question would be, well, is he being too much in the rules and regulations? Is he being overly ritualistic? That I'm not, if I have to go on the altar to offer puja, then I have to take baths. So the Vaikuntha airplane comes, I certainly want, it's as pure as the altar, so I certainly wouldn't want to get on the Vaikuntha airplane unless I took bath first. So, is he being overly ritualistic? That's the question. We have another example of that Brahman who was seated on the bank of the Godavari River, meditating on cooking sweet rice for the Lord, and he burned his finger in his meditation. A Vaikuntha airplane also came for him. There is no mention that he took bath before he got on the airplane. So was he too loose? Was that Brahman too loose? He should have taken bath before he got on the airplane. Maybe he had passed water. He hadn't even taken bath. He got on the airplane without taking bath. Was he too loose in following the rules and regulations? Or was Dhruva Maharaj too strict, a fanatic? That's the question. What to do, then what you should do. If a Vaikuntha airplane comes for you, should you take bath first? I don't want to make an offense. Maybe if I don't take bath, they won't let me on the plane. I was qualified to go back to Gaudiya, but then I forgot the rule to take bath before I got on the plane. And now they say, okay, we're going to leave you, you dirty moochie. The deal's off, you know. We were testing you to see if you would take bath, but you didn't take it, so now you have to stay here for one more lifetime. So what to do? You see? Well, this is a question we often face when we're dealing with different rules and regulations, you know, like Prabhupada in the early days, you know, taking boga out of the refrigerator that had meat in it and offering it to Krishna, you know. He didn't offer the meat, but there was meat sitting right beside the boga. I mean, that's completely against the rabbinical rule, you know. You don't allow meat into the refrigerator of the boga that's being offered to the Lord. So how do you deal with these little technicalities to know whether I'm being too strict, I'm being too loose, I'm properly balanced? Where do you draw the line? Well, if your spiritual master is there, you can ask him. Then you know you're okay. But what if he's not there? You can't check with him. Guru Maharaj, should I take bath before I get on the Vaikuntha airplane? Dhruva did it. The Brahmin in South India didn't appear to do it. Now, should I do it or not? I'm bewildered. One Vaishnava did it, another one didn't do it. What should I do? Should I take bath or not? What about tilak? Make sure my tilak is... I'm going to see Lord the Supreme Lord. Certainly I want my tilak to look good before I go to see the Supreme Lord. I should certainly put on some fresh tilak, or should I not? Maybe there's some tilak on the airplane. I could put it on the way. Now in this new Dreamliner, they have a shower for first class passengers. Maybe there's a shower on the Vaikuntha airplane. Because it certainly would be much more first class than that rascal Dreamliner of Qantas. You know. There certainly must be a shower. So all these questions may be there. What should I do? You know, Guru Maharaj is not here to ask. Well, the simple thing is, Te sham satata yuktanam Pajatam Pratipurvakam Tadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yenamam Upayanti Te. For those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So all you have to do, my dear devotees, is be very, very dedicated to Krishna at every minute. And he will give you everything you need to know in every situation, whether you should take bath before you get on the bike airplane or not. Every detail. He'll give you every single detail. You simply have to be sincere, that's all. And then all knowledge, all intelligence, all common sense, which we often lack, let's face it, except for some of us, like Vishnupriya Maharaj, she's loaded with common sense. But, some of us, you know, even in common sense, we're lacking sometimes. So, we just be very, very sincere, then we will become blessed with the intelligence of Niyam Agraha, how to properly balance in between being too strict and too loose. Does that answer your question?
How would you know that it's not our mind?
How do you know it's the dictation of the super soul? How do you distinguish whether this is Krishna from the heart guiding me like this, or it's my mind? Well, if you're in doubt, you know what that means? It means you're not devoted enough. Because if you're fully devoted, there'll be no doubt. If there's doubt, it means you're not fully devoted to Krishna. You're still playing a little game with you know, trying to maintain two lovers, Krishna and Maya both, you see. If you're fully ananyaschintayantomam yejana paryapasate tesham nachapayuktanam yogachemam vahamya. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion. What does exclusive devotion mean? Krishna wants 100% of your love. He doesn't want to share it with even 0.00000000001% with Maya Devi. He wants everything. He wants your whole heart and nothing short of your entire heart. Everything you must give to Krishna. So, I would answer you that if there's doubt whether this is the mind of the super soul, then you're still courting a love relationship with Maya Devi to some extent. So, tell Maya Devi to get lost. Never come back. Become exclusively devoted to Krishna, and then it'll be very clear, crystal clear. Prabhupada confirmed. One disciple asked him this question, Prabhupada, we don't know what to do. And Prabhupada told him that Krishna will guide you from within. One devotee, he also wrote a song about going out on Sankirtan, my godbrother Nirantara. He said, if you just go out on book distribution, go out on Sankirtan, Krishna will tell you what to say. Within the heart, he'll guide you what to say. When you try to distribute a book to somebody, Krishna will tell you what to say. He'll give you the words. So if we're in that mood of a completely surrendered Sankirtan devotee, willing to do anything and everything to please Krishna, then Krishna will give us all intelligence, exactly what to do, and we'll know this is Krishna telling me what to do. We'll know. We won't be able to know whether it was in my mind or is it, no, we will know it's Krishna.
And another question arises from that too, because sometimes we think that Krishna is telling us and we accept that, but when we ask the senior devotees, then they would say, no.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem with us, you know. With us souls who are still hovering on the material plane, it's a problem we have. Us struggling neophytes deal with that sometimes. We thought what Krishna wanted to do is we were wrong. What can I say? We got to get off the neophyte platform, Manaji. We got to get off the neophyte platform. We have to beg Krishna to liberate us from this neophyte platform of Krishna consciousness. And bring us to the platform of pure bhakti. Ahaitakiya pratiyata yadma supersedati. Unless your devotional service is completely 100% purged of even the slightest material motivation, and unless it's going on 24/7 at every nanosecond of the 24 hours, you will not be satisfied. Huh? Well, sometimes those who appear to be senior are not always senior also.
That's another point.
Just like Bali Maharaj, his senior guide was Shukracharya. The super soul within his heart was telling him, give this dwarf Brahman what he wants. But his spiritual master said, no, don't do it. But he was pure enough and sincere enough, he realized it became very clear to him his superior was actually wrong. And he disregarded the order of his superior and followed the dictate of his heart. and became one of the 12 great Mahajanas by doing so. So sometimes, even in ISKCON, there was the old days, it's a funny story actually, it was kind of sad at the time. One lady who was a very good con artist and really expert, she's a Japanese woman, she was a con artist. She came to the New York temple and convinced the devotees that she was the heiress to the Toyota fortune. She really had them convinced. She's just a con artist. And the temple president was a sannyasi. And he was completely convinced, and he was thinking, well, I got to make this sacrifice for Prabhupada's movement. He gave up sannyas and married her. Can you imagine? She was so expert, con artist, this woman. She was treated like a queen. They used to, she would be sitting in the Bhagavatam class, they would fan her during the class. I remember she visited the Miami temple. She had a female attendant who fanned her while she was hearing the class. I never forget that. What a scene it was. And everyone thought, even they told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, now we have Ford, you know, Ambarish, and now we have Toyota also. She was a con artist, you see. So, and she was, under her direction, the devotees were offering eggs to the deities. Can you imagine? Radha Govinda in New York being offered eggs. It was, the devotees were so carried away by this con artist, you see. And Prabhupada chastised them, you know, for following this so-called authority. So sometimes we have to be intelligent and realize if our authority is off. That's why in ISKCON now we have a thing. When you get initiated, you have to answer this question. What do you, you know, is there any situation when you can reject your guru? Because one has to, one doesn't give up one's brains when you surrender to Krishna. When you get initiated, you don't give up your brains. Bali Maharaj, he had the brains to realize his guru was misguiding him. So, it is possible that one superior authority could give a nonsense instruction. Actually, one time a president told me I should go out and steal. You know. I said, this is ridiculous. You know. I wrote Prabhupada about it. You know. It was silly. I mean, I needed some chalk in the kitchen, you know. We had to write down something in the menu or the shopping list. I didn't have any chalk. I said, Prabhu, we need some chalk. He said, well, go to the college campus and steal some chalk from one of the classrooms. That's what he told me to do. This is ridiculous. I have to go steal some chalk? So I wrote Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, no, we shouldn't steal. You know, because Prabhupada told me to follow my authority. And now my authority is telling me to do something that appears to be really ridiculous, you know. Just go to the college campus and go to the classroom and steal some chalk. Can you imagine? That's an inexpensive thing. I'm supposed to become a thief just so we can get a piece of chalk that may cost, you know, a few pennies, you know. It was stupid instruction. But Prabhupada told me to follow, so I better consult with Prabhupada directly. Either that or I consulted the GBC, I forget who I wrote about it. Because Prabhupada had written me not to steal. I don't know if it was before or after that, but he directly told me we shouldn't steal anything. So sometimes you have to, you know, you have to be intelligent to realize I'm being misguided. Even this person in a position of authority, I'm being misguided. You have to do the right thing. We should not use that as an excuse to disobey our authorities. That's going too far. Prabhupada wanted us to follow our authorities. But we shouldn't fanatically follow the authority. That's the point. We always keep our intelligence, keep our brains. Keep that, you know, super soul is seated in our heart, and we're actually devoted. He will give us good brains to understand what's right and what's wrong. So now I understand it's wrong. I'm going overtime. In some temples, I get chastised by the temple president if I go overtime. So I don't want to take any chances here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.